Brian, the longtime Boston Globe sports columnist, has over the years had a feature. He calls it his random... I don't know that Bob Ryan plays the organ, as talented as he is. But what Bob does occasionally is run a column called Random Items from the Sports Desk of the Mind, and he essentially pulls out little tidbits. Well, this morning I'm going to start my sermon with some random items from the clergy desk of the mind. I learned this week that the ever popular and familiar Grim Reaper cartoon genre, with which we are so familiar, you know, death shows up at your door in some kind of unexpected situation, like pulling over your car as if you were a cop. That form of cartoon didn't start appearing in the New Yorker until the 1960s, and I would have thought it had been there since the very beginning in the 1920s. Or consider that in 2008, our country spent about $508 billion combined on elementary and secondary education, but spent more than $720 billion on efforts to prolong the last 6 to 12 months of life. How about in my mailbox for November 1st, 2011, All Saints Day, the latest issue of the Christian Century, which is sort of the Sports Illustrated for clergy. Cover story, Lessons in Dying. And finally, an unexpected question from my five-year-old son yesterday. Daddy, are you going to die before mommy? My first thought was, well, actuarially, I am. Women live longer than men. I'm older than she is. I didn't tell him any of this. I simply said, I hope to be around a long time, and I'd like to think about living. So what's with all of these random data points? Did you notice a common thread? They all have to do with death. Today, we are going to have our second sermon on things we don't talk about in church. We're having this series because we need to talk about these things if we're going to have a strong, vibrant community. And some of you may be wondering, what do you mean we don't talk about deaths? We do funerals here. We're having an All Saints service today. We talk about death all the time. But how do we talk about death? And how do we think about death in terms of community? Those are pressing questions, questions that I think we do need to spend some time with. Now, I'm not going to say that modern Americans are different than all humans throughout history, but we seem, thanks to our technology and our culture and our media, to have found new and ever creative ways to put off thinking about death or grappling with it. We have entire industries that are designed to help older people feel young and to look young and to live a young lifestyle. And as we're living through this, particularly for those of us who are younger, it is hard for us to appreciate just what a seismic shift this is in terms of the way people live. For the vast majority of human history, people revered and esteemed their elders. They looked to old age as a time when people gained wisdom, when they were able to draw on the experience of living. And now we seem to say, it's the young, the hip, the cool who have all the answers. All too often, our elders are packed off to nursing homes and retirement communities where younger people won't have to see them. We can pay caregivers to go in and take care of them. Not all of us do it, but it happens a lot. We try to deny the reality of death. We try to think that we are the ones who are finally going to beat the odds. I'll share a secret with you. I think that one of the reasons I buy so many books is there are days when I've convinced myself that I can't die until I've read every single one of them. But of course, that's not the way it works. We know the old saw. In life, there are two things that are inevitable: death and taxes. And as certain members of our community know, if you've got a good lawyer or a good accountant, you can find a way to minimize your exposure to taxes. But you can't escape death. I can't escape death. It's the one activity in human life with a 100% participation rate. So why go on about this? What does this have to say to us as a community? Linda read us a passage from Paul's letter to the Romans. And Paul had an interesting relationship with the Roman church. He didn't found it. So he actually had to convince them that he had credibility to speak on matters of faith. And this was a church that needed to hear from somebody about matters of faith. It wasn't very large, anywhere from 40 to 200 people meeting at different houses in the city. But even at that early date, in the 50s, in the first century, people were already arguing about what was the right way to live the Christian life. There were debates about what kind of food people should eat, what kind of rituals people should engage in. And Paul lifts up this interesting situation where he talks about the weak and the strong. He's referring to people weak in faith and strong in faith. And interestingly, the strong in faith are doing things the wrong way, and the weak in faith are acting from the right motives. But Paul doesn't take sides, and he doesn't even tell us who these different groups are, because he wants them to set aside their differences, the things that are pulling them apart, to instead focus on that which unites them. And that is their faith in Jesus Christ and God's love for them. And never will this shared reality become clearer, we hear from Paul, than when we die. Another confession. I cannot tell you with any scientific accuracy what is going to happen to any of us when we die. I can tell you what I believe. I can tell you what I hope, but I cannot tell you, as a fact, what happens when we die. Nobody can tell you that. But our faith tells us that we will have an encounter with God. And at that moment, it's going to be the most intense one-on-one interview any of us has ever had. Paul tells us right here, we are going to be judged. We are going to be held accountable. But we don't like to talk about judgment in mainline churches, right? We just want to talk about the love of God. What are we being judged for? Didn't Paul tell us that we've already been saved, that we've been justified by grace, that there's nothing we can do in this life to earn God's love because God has already given it to us freely? How are we going to be judged? What are the criteria? Simple. We who have been blessed to receive the good news of Jesus, we who are part of the Christian community, are going to be held accountable for how we have lived in Christian community, how we have loved one another, how we have served one another, how we have helped one another. That's what God is going to be asking us. It's a matter, Paul tells us, of life and death. Our lives aren't about us as much as advertisers tell us, as much as we'd like to believe. They are about God. They're about living in God and through God and serving God's people. Scientists, as I speak, are busy working, trying to find ways to prolong human life. We know there are scientists and others who dream of the day that death itself can be conquered and eliminated. Now, the gospel tells us that Jesus Christ has conquered death once and for all. But our scientists and our doctors are working on a different kind of conquest. But if they were ever to succeed, and we never had to worry about dying, we would, of course, have to start worrying about getting older. And we'd have to worry about running out of money. We'd have to worry about where we were going to put everyone. The United Nations tells us that tomorrow we can celebrate the arrival of the 7 billionth human on planet Earth. Maybe science will conquer physical death, but that doesn't mean that it is going to abolish anxiety or fear or worry. But the good news is that is what Jesus has done for us. That is why Jesus died. And when we confront death, whether our own or that of our loved ones, we can know that we are not alone, that God is with us, that God has experienced the pain and the hurt and the loneliness of dying. Remember Jesus on the cross, fully human, in addition to being fully divine. And Jesus didn't have the stereotypical comfortable death that people would like to imagine they will enjoy, passing quietly in one's sleep without pain. Jesus knows what it is to die a hard, painful death, and so God can be with us and share in that moment with us. We need to talk about church and the death in the church, not just because of the reality that each of us will confront, but because we as individuals and a community need to choose how we are going to approach this moment in our lives. We can die alone, we can let others die alone, or we can come to the bedside of people to support families, to support one another, to show God's love when it's most needed. I know as a pastor, one of the things that blows me away is when a family invites me to be present at the end of life, that I am invited to be part of such an intimate moment is a blessing and a gift. It doesn't matter the hour or the time or the place. We can share this ministry with one another. We can show that the Christian community is present right until the very end and then beyond. I'm sure you have experienced what I have experienced in many instances. People who are dying aren't so much worried about themselves as they are about the loved ones they're going to leave behind and how they're going to hope and how they're going to deal with the pain and the loneliness. We are called to be present, to support one another, to to love one another, to be with one another. We have a choice in how we handle death. And that was brought to mind when I saw one of those New Yorker cartoons. The car has been pulled up the side of the road. The driver is looking out the window. Rather than the state trooper, the Grim Reaper's there. And he says, "You know why I pulled you over, don't you?" How do we respond to death in that situation? Do we make an excuse? Do we try to talk our way out of the situation? Do we hope that if maybe we look away, death will look at somebody else? Many of us have tried these tactics with cops. They never work. And they won't work with death. So what we can do at that point, knowing that we are not alone in that car, that Jesus is with us, we can look death in the eye and say, "I do know why you're here. And I am ready to meet God." Would you please join me in a spirit of prayer? Holy, gracious God, we thank you for the gift of the church. We thank you for the gift of life. We ask that you give us the wisdom.